Welcome back to the special Looseheads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Hope you enjoyed the first part of our chat with Jonathan Davis. Now we'll be heading over to part two. As we mentioned in the first part, that we will be discussing his return to Union as well as his work in the media and his all-time 15 to take to Mars. So here is part two of our special podcast with Jonathan Davis. And then from that league experience, Jonathan, you do make the decision to go back to Union. I mean, was that a difficult choice or quite a simple decision for you at the time that Union was sort of where you wanted to go back to?
It was an odd one. Again, it was like the decision of going to rugby league. I thought, oh, shall I go back? And the pressures were exactly the same because it was 8 years later. Six years later. You know, the game had changed. I changed. I'd gone a bit older. But it was an opportunity, I suppose. There was more kind of opportunities for me work-wise because I didn't have any opportunities up north with the rugby league club. Didn't offer me any coaching roles or not that I didn't. I don't know if I wanted to do. So it was just another chapter, another decision. But again, my wife wasn't very ill, and then the family, the support of going back to Wales, and me then making the most the opportunity, just saying I want a job when I go back. And I didn't really want to play for Wales again because I was tired, and I played, you know, I think I was like 10 years of international rugby then with no rest for a long time. So my body was breaking down. But when Wales call, you've got to play. So I enjoyed a couple of games for Wales and played for Cardiff. And yeah, one thing I enjoyed then was I went back and We got to the European Cup final. We got the semi-final a year later. You know, played for Wales, but I was playing with youngsters. So, you know, going to places like Treorchy and Dunvant. And again, same old scenario. All those back rowers wanted to kill me, but I was playing with all the youngsters, you know, and I enjoyed playing with the youngsters. So, but it was just... I was just enjoying it then, really. Just enjoyed it. And I knew my time was up because my knee was killing me and everything. So I was just on borrowed time. And I thought, right, okay, plan my next step in the future, see what's going to happen, and then retire gracefully. So I called time on my own playing days, not someone else calling time.
Yeah, and I noticed one of the quotes that you said when you moved back to Union, Jonathan, was that you said you never get cold playing rugby league. So was that the difference when you went back to Union, that you were... maybe a little bit colder again?
Tell you what, when I was up playing Hull KR in the Cup,
that was cold.
No win, and we drew up there 4-4 or something. I was cold as a bit. it was odd, you know. Once you have a ball in league, you'd have it more often, a ball in hand. And I, you know, I'd forgot how dominant packs of forwards were and rucks and mauls and how slow it was. So I said a flip and throwaway line that's kind of stuck with me forever.
I guess kind of something you've probably been asked 1,000 times before would be whether you kind of prefer league or Union, but maybe looking at it a different way. If when we kind of come out of the COVID-19 pandemic, we were only to have kind of one form of rugby survive, what would you take from each game to kind of create a super hybrid version of rugby?
That's tough, though, because I remember Bob Dwyer came up with something years ago because, you know, they're more aligned to each other in Australia. I think they live together, you know, a bit closer. I don't know, because if you take the fascination of a line out, you know, that would, a lot of people love the line outs on this, you know, you wouldn't have your 6'8", 6'9" players playing, because rugby league, you know, I think John Harrison played for St. Helens. And, you know, he was about 6'8" or 6'10", but he looked freakish, like, because they were all short and squat and, like, they run through brick walls. So it's odd, you know, the scrummaging is important in rugby union, not in rugby league. Maybe, I don't know which is best sometimes because you get clogged down in rugby union. I think they're both, the way I look at it sometimes, it's like snooker and pool. They look the same, but they are totally different. And yeah. I think you couldn't adapt them. I don't think you could never do a hybrid game, and that you could try and, you know, do you get rid of wing forwards in rugby union? No, because you've got some of the greatest players that have ever played the game. And where would they play in rugby league? You know, where would some of the rugby league players play in rugby union? You know, for me, they're so different technically. I think it'd be very, very difficult to make a hybrid game and keep everyone happy. I think it's, and again, they're both wonderful games. I think if I love the club game in Llanelli and Neath, you know, because all my mates and family would come and watch, then I'd love the club games in rugby league. And maybe the international game is, I'm lucky I'm doing both now, but they seem bigger occasions in rugby union. I think that's what we've got to kind of, the rugby league have got to replicate, is to try and make it a bigger spectacle in international, because that's what really people remember. Mm. If you ask, you know, who did Dan Carter play for? They'd go New Zealand. You know, if you ask, who did Eric Anley play for? Most people would go Wigan. So that's the difference, I think. International rugby is massive in union, and people just, Shane Williams is Welsh, you know, that's all. Owen Farrell, who's he play for? England. And that's the difference. And that's, if I think New Zealand, Australia and Great Britain or England have got to try and keep that going at international level. I think it's vitally important. The NRL are not too keen on it, I suppose, because they've got a massive competition down there. But I think they need to work on the international kind of imagery.
Do you think they can get there?
Well, you know, what's going to happen this year with England playing Australia? If England and Australia play this year, it's an amazing opportunity, you know, because they had a brilliant game in the World Cup final. It was very, very close. If England just sort their kind of outside backs and their half backs out, they've got a threat because the forwards are brilliant. But that would be an amazing spectacle this year, you know, and one that I really, really enjoy. If you watch some of the Sean Johnson play, you know, Cameron Smith and all these players, they're brilliant individuals to watch. So I think if England, Australia goes ahead this year, it's an amazing opportunity to really, really publicise international rugby league.
And you said there, Jonathan, as well, that you're obviously privileged to be now commentating on both league and union. I mean, how much are you enjoying that role? Because it does seem to, from an outsider looking in, who works in the journalism world, that you've created quite a niche for yourself to be able to maybe commentate on a Challenge Cup game on a Friday and then off to the Six Nations on a Saturday or an international game.
It was a bit difficult because, you know, at one stage, BBC had a lot of the rights. So I would do a rugby league game or say it, you know, Saturday at 1 o'clock and then do a rugby league game at 3 o'clock, which sometimes scrambles the brain because, you know, when you're thinking a fullback, you know, they kick a ball through in rugby league or run it back and you're thinking, oh, no, you should have kicked that a touch on doing the wrong game, yeah? So if you've got to really be careful, like the 20-meter and the 22-meter, if you say that in the wrong game, right, oh, they jump on you, the supporters, my God. Or touch judge or linesman, you know, something as trivial as that, they would just jump on you. So, but it was, I enjoyed it. I'm lucky because I playing in the number 10 position, I'm playing fullback or standoff in league as well, you've got to understand all the kind of aspects or the job of all the people in front of you. And that's helped me doing, you know, both codes. But also then, when I came back to rugby union, a lot of the defence coaches, so I understood the defensive mechanisms of, you know, the blitz and the drift defence. So, yeah, my job is to simplify it. That's all it is to simplify both games and explain why that's happened. And if you can do that, I think you're doing your job. And, you know, I'm lucky. I enjoy it. And I've worked with some great professionals. Like, you know, you look at Steve Ryder and John Inverdale, Gabby Yorath, Claire Balding. And then, you know, you got your Ray French and Dave Woods and Keir and Nobby. It's, you're working with, you know, the best the UK, you know, I've come up with. So then I worked with Bill McLaren as well. So it's been, you know, sometimes I look back and look, you know, I'm a council house boy from Trinsara, and I've and I've sat and worked with these great people, and you just pinch yourself sometimes. And I do sit down sometimes, say on a pre-match, and I'm sat there having dinner, and I'm in a couple of too many glasses of red wine, and I look back and think, my God, you know, I've been so lucky that, you know, I'm mixing with these people and enjoying the company of these people.
You mentioned Bill McLaren there, Jonathan, and he's probably one of, if not one of the most famous commentators in the game. I think Mark's going to get a picture up that we've managed to pick out of you two sharing the commentary box and a bottle of champagne as well. I mean, what was he like to work with? Because he just seems such an inspirational person who could just read the game and talk about the game so, so well.
He was just such a lovely man. You know, he enjoyed the sport. And I think he felt privileged that, you know, he was there commentating on it. And he never made it personal with anyone. And he just had a way with words. You know, he was just a lovely, lovely guy. And, it was just an experience to work with him. You know, I think the respect that he had when he walked into a stadium with him, you know, towards the latter end of his career there, and I kind of looked after him a little bit and ushered him here and ushered him there, make sure he was in his seat early. But, you know, just to be around him was just lovely, because he was just lovely bloke, and he'd have time for everyone. And, you know, his voice was, you know, synonymous with rugby union. But then I think, again, you have maybe it's a little bit more tribal when club rugby league. And when I go, you know, the work that Ray French has done for rugby league, you know, has been immense. And again, I class Ray up there with Bill McLaren. You know, and Ray, you know, Ray played rugby union international and rugby league international, you know, and then he had a full-time job in Cowley Grammar School and created a lot of great sides there. So, yeah, I look back at it and appreciate the, you know, how lucky I've been to work with these people.
And you mentioned a few of them there as well, Jonathan, in terms of the BBC gang, you know, Jerry McGuskett, Clive Woodward, etc. And there is another photo which we haven't got, but after Wales thrashed England, I think it was 2012 or 2013, they're all stood there not looking particularly happy. There's one Jonathan Davis on the end with a massive smile on his face.
I think it's odd, you know, it's because, you know, that's, you know, the following year then England come down and beat us, and then people wipe the smile off my face. But, you know, that's at the time, it's a moment in time, isn't it? And it's just, I didn't know that I'd done that, because what happens is you go after the match, you go down pitch side, then you have all, you know, the three English boys have, you know, they've been absolutely battered. Wales have battered them 30-3. And no one really expected it. And all of a sudden, you know, we link to someone doing an interview, Sonia McLaughlin's interviewing someone. And I think I've spotted someone behind the camera, and he's like waving and jumping, you know. He's had about 8 pints, so he's happy. And then I just smiled at him. And it just happens that in that precise moment, the boys look miserable as sin. So on Monday, I went to Hong Kong Sems to do some work. And it had gone absolutely viral. Everywhere I went, it was a photo. So it was funny. It was funny.
You weren't the fan, Rob, who was putting Jonathan off in the stands, were you? Celebrating a Wales win?
I've grown up in the wrong era. I never really had the pleasure of watching Jiffy, you know, but my dad's obviously banging on about how good he is, showing me videos on YouTube. You know, I've sort of grown up watching Stephen Jones, Dan Bigger, Gareth Anderson. But, you know, there's been a few very special occasions for me with the Wales-England matches. Unfortunately, whenever I've actually been to an England-Wales match, we've never won. So I sort of tend to stay away from those matches now. But yeah, a few stick out to me now. Scott Williams at Twickenham, 2012, where he ripped the ball off. I think it was Courtney Laws, wasn't it?
And then
down the pitch. Under the posts. Gavin Henson, when he slipped and kicked the points against England at Millennium Stadium. And then, of course, you can't forget when Wales dumped England out of their own World Cup as well.
Don't remember that one.
Yeah, few special.
Still can't believe we won that.
I know. We've got four scrum halves on the pitch at the same time.
I remember the atmosphere in the stadium that day. It was just everything just dropped apart from a pocket of red shirts in the West Stand. They were just going absolutely mental. It was, crazy, crazy game. And on that, on sort of the Wales-England, Jonathan, if you don't mind, I mean, you, for your first game for Wales was against England, am I right in saying, and your last game was against England. I think it was a quiz question, actually, on the Looseheads quiz that we did the other week. But what are those games like to play in? Because we, and me and the media, we always like to build them up and build them up, but they just seem to be such a special occasion when they come around.
I think, in hindsight, you know, you wish you could have enjoyed them a bit more. But, you know, you get caught up in the atmosphere and the tension, and unless you're winning comfortably with 10 minutes ago, you know, you can't really enjoy it, you know, because you're focused on it. But, you know, the build-up, and I don't miss playing anymore because time catches up with everyone, you know. And, but once they knock and they walk out, you know, that feeling of, expectation is unbelievable. I still have, you know, goosebumps when the two sides come out. No matter if it's in Twickenham or if it's in Cardiff, but they're great games to play in. And you've got to see, that's the thing. I think you've got to savour them. You've got to try and play. If you're fit, you've got to try and play as much as you can. People say, oh, you know, you've got to look after yourself, this and that. The player knows himself. He's the one who knows himself. If he's capable of playing, if he wants to play. Because the game sometimes is easier than the training session. It's just, you know, you remember those and just make sure you enjoy them. We certainly did. It's just lovely, lovely, lovely memories.
And you're obviously really enjoying the commentary as well, Jonathan, but have you got any plans to do any sort of coaching or mentoring as well alongside it? Or
I don't know, you know, you listen and things change all the time. I was thinking, I do less telly now because of rights issues, and it's spread across all, you know, different companies now. So, you know, I do enjoy the commentating. It's been good to me. But you never know, you know. Would you go back and help a little bit, like whether it's a little bit of mentoring with players or a little bit of tactical kind of analysis, or just looking at players and just commenting on maybe improving their game a little bit. So, but it's such, I don't know, you've got to have kind of some kind of, you know, the badges or the coaching badges or something else. So maybe, I think every club needs someone from the outside to give them a different perspective, because if things go badly, all of a sudden they close ranks, don't they? And they, so maybe, but I'm not sure if there's any opportunities out there to go back into coaching or go, you know, as a technical advisor or a mentor. But it would be interesting to see what I, you know, if I could fit in and maybe add something. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, well, we'll put you in the coaching shoes now, if you like, Jonathan, because I think it's time for your World 15 to take to Mars. And Mark normally leads this section of the podcast very nicely. So over to you, Mark.
Well, I complete indulgence, me sitting on a podcast with Jonathan Davis. I'm just going to share you this, because this is my best 15 to play Mars away. Which doesn't work very well on a podcast, but 1 to 15, all three subs, coach, waterboy, manager and kit man is Jonathan Davis. And all the tries, going back to Rob, all the tries we used to play in the back garden, where he would try and be somebody I'd never heard of playing for Wales. All the tries I recreated were Jonathan Davis in an ICI C&P top.
There we are. Yeah.
You still do that at Wilmslow Rugby Club, don't you, Mark?
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think so. But here's the drill, Jonathan. Mars have landed on Earth. They've challenged us to a game of rugby. We've lost the toss, so it's going to be on Mars. Shuttle leaves tomorrow, takes 4 weeks to get there. Any era, any player, any code, we've got to win.
Start off the off field. Kit man is going to be Ricky Gervais.
He's come up quite a few times, hasn't he?
Yes. Got someone who has got the cutting wit you know, dry wit, say anything in the kit room, right? Because you'll have all boys scrounging, wanting everything, but you're firm and he's got to put you away with a line, right? So Ricky Gervais, team manager, I'm going to go with, there's two roles. So I got Jim Mills as one, and then Billy Connolly as well. So they'll have them two as well. So those two. So they're important. Waterboy, I think, would be, only because he did this before, Yestinaris, right? We played against France in Cardiff in a rugby league match. I had a dead leg and I should have come off, but I stayed on. And then we scored a try and the conversion was to win the match. And then I was hobbling back thinking, why didn't anyone else take his conversion? And then Yestin came on. I think he was 17th or 18th man or something. And then as he gave me the sand, he looked at me and said, oh, I'm glad I'm not kicking this. I can run off. So, you need some Yestin, you know, for that perspective. Put things into perspective and keep you honest. So I got Yestin there. And the coach. Now then.
You've had some pretty special coaches in your time.
I have. You know, I think, look back, the first one I had for Wales, a guy called John Bevan, who sadly passed away. Clive Griffiths and Dougie Lawton. And then you got Chris Anderson I had as well. Mm-hmm. Gareth Jenkins was a tough one, this. For banter and fun, I think, and this is what I'm going to base my whole thing, I'm not the best, you'd have to have Gareth Jenkins, I think, the Llanelli coach. Things he comes up with is just, they're pearlers. You know, he is just funny. And so I go with Gareth Jenkins as a coach.
Right, so here's the main event then. 1 to 15 and 3 subs.
We start off 15. I go Christian Cullen.
Don't argue with that.
Best player I've ever seen, I think. And I think also because he likes a swig. He's good company. He's funny as hell. So you've got to have, this is a team. So there's one. I'd have Ian Evans on one wing because he's a very good friend of mine. So he's a good lad. I'd have Brian O'Driscoll in the centre because he's a good crack as well, good fun. Number 12 would be Mark Ring.
Yes, what a player.
He's fun. He is like a social animal, right? He will just... So that'll be that one. I'm trying to think now. So I got... Do you have to pick? Yeah, I'm not picking myself, Neil, am I? No.
Well, that depends.
I'll be...
Who's this? Roger Black said when he won silver and he said when Michael Johnson won everything, he said, we were all running for silver. That's the esteem you are. So, actually, you've got to pick someone else playing standoff.
Okay. So I will go... What was a tough one, this is. I like Andrew Mertens. I like, he's a good lad as well. He's funny. He's good. He is good company. He would be brilliant company. Yeah, I go Andrew Mertens.
Mertens, okay.
Then scrum half is tough. I got two players scrum half. I got Rob Jones.
Yeah.
Or I got Andrew Johns.
Because
he's bad as well. Yeah. Good fun as well. So that would be that. Now then.
You haven't picked a left winger.
Oh, left winger. Player-wise, left winger is Campisi. But you wouldn't be long on a long journey. I think boys could fill him in. Who would I pick then? It's so difficult, isn't it, when you think of all the players in the world ever.
The guy that redefined the game once it had gone professional, Jonah Lomu.
Oh, yeah. Stick him on.
Stick him on. Will he get it?
Yeah, doing a lot, only because like we don't know what we're going to play against in March, so we need a big club who give the ball to put him in. Like the three back row players would be Lawrence Dallaglio, Bob Skinstad,
yeah,
and Martin Williams.
Fair play.
Some back row up.
Fair play, yeah. Some back row.
And they're good lads. They're good lads as well, really good lads. And then I would go second rows. Second rows. Go Martin Johnson and Ali Min Jones. Go on.
Can't argue.
Yeah.
Can't argue.
And then the front row, Dai Young has got to be in it.
Yeah, great shout.
Dai Young. I would go then. Martin Dermot from Wigan.
Yeah.
The party, because he's funny, he makes me laugh all the time. And the other prop would be Jason Leonard.
Yeah.
The fun bus for anything.
Yeah.
If it's an Union hooker for throwing in, I'd get Keith Wood as well, okay?
Great. Who's your captain?
Oh, hang on. I think I go Jono.
Yeah.
Jono. And then three subs would be. Right, we're going to look at the characters here now. Characters. So one would be Tom Shanklin. Funny as.
Yeah.
The other one would be Andy Powell.
Yeah. Answer me, didn't it? I want you started with that.
Yeah. It's like the moon buggy.
I know. It was a third one. I suppose it's got to be no, it could be anyone then. Doesn't matter. And the third one. Who else did I? Oh, a tough one that is. I'm trying to think now. Got to be a character, isn't he? Got to be a.
It's a long time, 4 weeks on a shuttle.
It got to be Glenn Webber.
Glenn Webber?
Oh. Glenn Webber. They would just sort all the social side out. Those three would be brilliant. So I picked it, not on, it's a bit of a mixture, but serious and funny and character. So that's a tough one.
That's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant.
Great mix of characters in there, Jonathan. As you say, it's going to be a long trip to Mars, so you need a good balance in there. So it's honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure. The time has flown this afternoon when I've been speaking to you, but I'd just like to say it's been an honour to speak to you, Jonathan, and thanks very much for taking the time to come on the Loose Heads podcast this week.
There we are. No, I enjoyed it, lads. So doing some great work. It's very important. So catch up soon when all this is over.
And there's always many thanks to Rob, Dave and Mark.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And that's been another edition of the Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Thanks very much for listening.